The following is a special documentary prepared by students at University Laboratory High School in Urbana, Illinois, in collaboration with Illinois Public Media.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together.
Thing that people don't always recognize about the University of Illinois is where this university rests in the historical context. This is a central place that was really, really significant for the movement and the growth of opportunity for people with disabilities in the country. And we said that there's 40 to 50 million Americans with disabilities around this country. This place, Champaign-Urbana, Dr. Nugent, and starting this program here for students with disabilities, we're a catalyst for the opportunities that all of those Americans now enjoy.
Most of us see up to the curve. Very few of us can see around it or imagine what's around it. And, that's where, vision of a pioneer comes from. This is someone who can imagine a reality that has never before existed. I mean, that Nugent could imagine a reality in which young people with disabilities in wheelchairs could go to college and graduate and get jobs and have families and live productive lives and successful and enjoyable lives. That was a unique vision in 1948.
There were just so many things that came out of Tim's proactive efforts to create educational opportunities for people with disabilities that it changed the world.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another right now.
The quest for equal rights for people with disabilities at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign has been a tough battle and is still far from over. Tracing back through history, the vision of equal rights for people with disabilities can be found in Dr. Timothy Nugent, whose program revolutionized opportunities now available for students with disabilities.
Illinois Public Media and University Laboratory High School proudly present his story in Breaking Down Disability Barriers, The Legacy of Timothy Nugent. I'm Sheila Gogla.
And I'm Catherine Floss.
Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we get the Alamo. We will always remember how they died for liberty. Let's remember Pearl Harbor and go on to victory.
While Tim Nugent attended college, World War II raged. In response to the attack on Pearl Harbor, Nugent enlisted with the Army in 1942. As a Medical Corps instructor, he continued his training and witnessed firsthand the struggles of disabled veterans. In 1943, he transferred to the 99th Infantry Division and was deployed to fight alongside the European Allies in the Battle of the Bulge. Nugent came away with a leg injury that never fully healed, but more importantly, with strong personal views on the rights of people with disabilities.
Tim Nugent came back from World War II, and he was recognizing that when other guys were coming back from World War II with injuries that created permanent disabilities, they weren't able to use their GI bills to go to college. There were no college campuses that were accessible at that time, and no university administrations wanted people with disabilities on their campuses. But Tim recognized how unfair this was and started pounding on administrators' doors and helping them understand that these guys gave their lives for the U.S. Their injuries came as a result of war, and at the very least, they deserved a college education. He just wanted to provide opportunities for people who couldn't return to their blue-collar jobs to get a college education and be able to provide for their families in other ways.
In 1948, after discharge from military service, Tim Nugent joined the health services staff at the University of Illinois at Galesburg, a satellite campus created to accommodate huge numbers of war veterans going to college on the GI Bill. Although Nugent was hired to teach health education, his main goal was to begin a program to open up opportunities for people with disabilities. The Galesburg Branch Campus, at a former military hospital, offered the perfect location to pilot a program for veterans and eventually others who used wheelchairs.
I envisioned the opportunity to work with these people with various causes and manifestations of disability to make it possible for them to get a higher education. But I learned quickly that they needed more than just schooling. They needed experiences that were competitive. They needed experiences that were social and various other challenges to fulfill their life.
Nugent initially faced an education gap among those with disabilities. Many had never attended high school, much less elementary school, due to school building accessibility issues across the country. For many with disabilities, coming to Galesburg was their first taste of life at school.
That was a huge thing. When Tim Nugent started the rehab center, he had to fight the medical model of disability. When he started the program after World War II, wheelchairs were designed for somebody to push you around, not for you to push yourself around. You know, people take care of, you know, if you have a disability, you go to an institution.
Nugent wanted to give students with disabilities opportunities that they hadn't had growing up. Throughout his life, Nugent played organized sports. He soon realized that athletics were beneficial not only for the able-bodied, but for those with disabilities as well.
I wanted to get other teams that had started up in the country together for a tournament. It was an interesting experience. Then I realized, golly, this is something that should develop. So I founded the National Wheelchair Basketball Association, and within 5 years, we had three conferences and about 25 or 30 teams.
Nugent encouraged sports fans in the community to attend exhibition basketball games featuring his athletes. Seeing what they could do changed public perceptions about those with disabilities and generated greater support for the program.
Tim realized that if he devoted his lifetime to giving lectures on disability, he would be hard-pressed in the end, to have made much of a difference in helping people understand. He said, lectures don't work. So how do we change attitudes? Sport was a common denominator. If you had an exhibition, a wheelchair basketball exhibition, and individuals in the stands who really did not know what paraplegia was, if they saw someone with paraplegia make 5 out of 8 three-point shots in a basketball game, those people readily knew and understood that's remarkable. So they immediately left and with a changed understanding about the abilities of people with disabilities, and in a way that was actually pretty meaningful. That was perhaps even the greatest value of sport.
You saw that man playing basketball, on a regular court, regular height baskets. You couldn't think of them as disabled anymore. And the same was true about the people in wheelchairs. They went out on the floor and they lost their inhibitions, overcame their self-consciousness, built their self-confidence.
But in the spring of 1949, it appeared that the program for students with disabilities would shut down because the Galesburg branch at the University of Illinois was closing. Tim Nugent brought a group of students with disabilities to the state capitol in Springfield to march in protest of the closure. Not satisfied with the response in Springfield, the protesters set their sights on the program being transferred to the main campus in Urbana-Champaign.
We marched on the capitol of Springfield. I had 22 cars driven by people with disabilities, most of them paraplegics. First, we went to the governor's mansion. The governor escaped through the back door, didn't want to see us. We went to the Capitol, parked illegally in the Circle Drive, couldn't be seen there. Then we went across the Armory to meet, and Senator Thompson, who was a senior senator at that time but was from Galesburg, who I had met previously, came over to greet us and talk to us and, in a sense, apologize. We also marched on the campus here. And I remember being at Lincoln Hall, which is one of the older academic buildings on campus, And there was paint scaffolding on the side of the building with planks. So we took some of those planks down and put them over the steps leading into Lincoln Hall from the Broadwalk, and I had my wheelchairs wheel up and down them to prove that we could do it.
Eventually, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign administrators accepted Nugent's program, but they remained very skeptical, providing limited funding. The lack of dollars forced Nugent to personally seek funding through private grants.
We were given 3 tar paper shacks in what was called Stadium Terrace. They were old army barracks, no insulation, tar paper siding, no insulation in the floor or ceilings. They had space heaters. If you were within 10 feet of the space heater, you were too warm. If you were 11 feet away, you were freezing. That was our beginning on this campus.
Because for a number of years, we didn't have any appropriations from the university. Tim was raising all the money, the VA, for each of the individuals who were VA disability connected, gave a stipend toward their education and their treatment. And so Tim used this money in order to finance the program until such a time that the university saw fit to give him a budget. And even after he had a budget, many times if he had a need, he'd have to go out and go to private individuals or to private organizations or companies to help raise money to do what he thought was necessary.
One of Tim Nugent's many roles was helping students adjust to college life. Many students with disabilities arrived at college having spent their lives fully dependent on their parents. Nugent held week-long orientations before every school year to teach basic life skills.
During orientation, my staff and I would work with these students in their bedroom, getting in and out of bed, dressing, undressing, getting on and off the toilet stool, getting in and out of the shower, all those things.
Many times maybe mom or dad had done all of these things for them, and now I wanted them not to have this type of help and to do it on their own. After a while, I'd had individuals that come back after they graduated and been out of school for a number of years, come back and say, "Hey, I'm sure glad you got on my case and stayed on my back, because it's paid big dividends later."
Person who had been in bed for 21 years. He came down here during our functional training week. Didn't plan to go to school, just wanted to be trained functionally. He had a fella pushing him everywhere. I told the fella, "Leave, we'll call you when we want you. Don't come back." Now this guy's eyes just widened, and he was just white as a sheet. We put him through all sorts of things. He went through our functional training program. He went back home to Chicago. He called me up after he got home, and he said, "If I could learn all this in a week, what would happen if I came to school?" Now, this guy's already 39 years old. I just said to him, "Jack, you won't be the bum that you are today." He came to school. He graduated in 3 years. He became an editor with Bausch Medical Advertising Firm in Chicago. He, believe it or not, was in one of the largest hospital centers in the United States, Chicago. He was a few blocks from several hospitals, but he lay in bed for 21 years, not able to do anything for himself.
Although Nugent was very effective at helping these first-time students, his methods were met with skepticism from parents.
Parents came down, and they were reluctant to leave their student on this big campus, and they didn't know me from Adam. They didn't know if they could trust me or not. And I would say to them, "Don't come back to campus until you're invited." And every fall we had a banquet after we got to this campus, and we'd invite the parents down. The students were in control of everything that weekend. But these parents would go to the first motel outside of Champaign-Urbana and spend a week or two out there scouting me out.
Much like some parents, the greater community was skeptical of Nugent's efforts to integrate those with disabilities into society.
One of the worst fights I had in my entire life was at a restaurant bar in Galesburg, where Harold Sharp and his wife and I and some others went into the restaurant. We passed through the bar, and there were two couples seated at the bar. And this one girl turned around and said to her partner, "Don't tell me they allow those people in here, too." And the wife got pretty mad, and I ended up having to separate the two of them.
But it was University of Illinois officials that were among the most skeptical. Administrators believed that students with disabilities could not stand up to the rigors of academic life.
The university itself had a very negative attitude. They said originally that these people would be demoralizing, distracting, an extra cost, an extra liability, and what would they do with a college education? Well, I would like to do as well as many of my wheelchair graduates have done, because three or four of them have given us $1 million each for the program.
The U of I administration restricted Nugent's ability to accommodate students not only by giving little financial support, but also by limiting admissions.
Certain administrators and others on campus were afraid of the program. They put a limit on the number of students I could accept, and I was refusing, as I said earlier, 15 for everyone I accepted. And writing a letter no was a lot harder than writing a letter yes. And the number of times I had to explain myself to other people, legislators, school superintendents, pastors, whatnot, it was a difficult situation. And that quota persisted until Gordon Ray became the provost on campus.
Besides working with the administration, Nugent also worked with faculty members to modify classrooms to accommodate students with wheelchairs, but even that was a struggle. Some faculty initially were unhappy with Nugent's ideas about accessibility, but eventually many began to see the benefits of having students with disabilities on campus.
I was trying to reschedule a class from Bevere Hall, which was not accessible beyond the first floor. I had ramped it through the steps. I put a ramp right through the steps, half ramp. I wanted to move an English class from the third floor to the first floor, and the professor refused to do it. So he and I tangled on the phone a couple of times. He said, "Look," he said, "I've been here 7 years, and I have my classes 1, 2, and 3 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, and Friday in this room, and I'm not going to relocate." I said, "We'll see about that." So I got over his head. He had to relocate the first floor, but I embarrassed him. I said, "You won't let a student attend your class who's in a wheelchair because of your convenience." I remember maybe 10, 11 years later, one of the professors called me up. He said, "You know, one of the real wonderful things about your students being in class is that now the able-bodied students are afraid not to get there when the snow's out." He actually said his attendance had increase because my wheelchair kids were getting there, and it would embarrass the able-bodied students not to get there.
Tim Nugent's next goal was to make transportation around campus easier and more accessible for students with disabilities. Up until that point, students had to travel by wheelchair across sidewalks without curb cuts. Nugent's initial solution was carpools.
I made out a sheet of paper, and I would put one column passenger, next column driver. And I went to put the name of the passenger driver there, and I would put the origin and the destination for each hour of the day. And at 5:30 in the morning, I used to go around in the tar paper shacks that were our barracks or our dormitory at the time. I would lay it on the beds of the students so the driver would know who is to pick up and the person who needed transportation would know who's going to pick them up.
But Nugent soon realized that the more plausible solution would be to create accessible buses.
At one point in our history, Greyhound Corporation wanted to give me two buses. And I wrote this up, and I gave it to my dean, and it sat on his desk for a whole year. Hugh McCalkin and Jim McManus, both parents of students I had in wheelchairs. They made a letterhead, and they sent a letter to the president of the university telling him about the buses that Greyhound wanted to give us, and he accepted it in 24 hours. But it sat in my dean's desk for a whole year. By that time, the buses were gone. When the parents went to Orville Swan Caesar to accept the buses, I'm quoting this now, he said, "Tim Nugent is either a damn fool or a damn liar or an absolute idiot if he thought I was going to pay insurance on $1 million worth of buses while he made up his mind." Well, they spent about an hour and a half convincing Mr. Caesar, the founder and owner of Greyhound at the time, that it wasn't my fault. So he said, "I'll get buses for you no matter where I have to go." Well, he went to Mexico and brought buses back that were completely dilapidated. At 1 o'clock, Mr. Carmen Blitz, who did all the engineering on our buses from that day on, called me up and said, Tim, can you be here by 7 in the morning? I said, yes. And I got there by 7 in the morning. He showed me the buses. So Mr. Bush says, Tim, I'll refabricate those buses, and you just have to pay for the actual materials I use. With my private monies, I paid Mr. Blitz for the materials. He did all the engineering and fabrication, everything free. From that day on, Mr. Blitz modified every one of our buses, highway buses, transit buses, and also arranged for our buses to be repaired when we traveled across the country for basketball trips, track trips, and things like that by the Greyhound Corporation.
Open up. Everything's waiting for you. You can go your own way. Go your own way. You can call it another lonely day.
The severity of disabilities is a wide-ranging spectrum, and Nugent was adamant in his desire to enable all people with disabilities to achieve their goals. Nugent paved the way for people with severe disabilities to receive a post-secondary education by creating Beckwith Hall, a residence hall designed to serve students who needed help with daily living.
I had a boy, very tiny little fella from Ohio, who could only use two fingers on one hand. He was an electric power chair. But he had an IQ of about 152. And he had responses that impressed me. I had a couple other real severe disabilities at the time, and I thought, I can't send these kids home. This is their only chance. So about 3, 4, or 5 years later, a member of my staff, Gilbert Fink, assistant professor and supervisor of occupational therapy, was selling his house and buying a new one. So I said to him, I said, why don't we use your house? So we did. I made them in charge of the home. They hired the assistants that would assist them. They did the budgeting. They ordered the food. I wanted it to be a real living experience. They did a fabulous job. And that house existed for years. Well, then Mr. Beckwith, who was a farmer, gave the university about $350,000. So I wrote a proposal, so we built what was Beckwith House on 2nd and John Street. But now that's going to be in the new Eikenberry Residence Hall on Gregory Street, which is a real far advancement from what we started with.
Later, Tim Nugent's innovations on the University of Illinois campus helped shape the national standard for accessibility.
Dr. Scott came from the Veterans Administration and spent some time on campus. He was reviewing things for the VA. He went back and reported that Champaign and Urbana and the University of Illinois was the most accessible place he saw and travels across the country. So when the Easter Seal and the President's Committee on Employment of the Handicapped were going to meet with the American Standards Association to convince them to create a standard on accessibility, I was asked to make a presentation to them. Following that, they decided to make this an American standard, and I became the Director of Research, the Secretary of the Steering and Sectional Committee, and subsequently the National Chairman of the American Standards for Accessibility.
From developing the wheelchair sports program to creating accessible facilities on campus, Tim Nugent's main goal was to give students with disabilities the skills needed to succeed in life after their post-secondary education. Nugent pushed them to their limits, holding them to high expectations because he wanted to see them succeed.
Because of the negative attitudes that prevailed and the concepts and attitudes that were so common, I had to be a little harsher with my students than I would have liked to be. I wouldn't allow them to be pushed because I thought there was some employing officer, because many employer officers came here all year around right after World War II. Some employing officer might see them being pushed and think that's necessary. So I stressed them, wheel yourself, be independent, even sometimes to their chagrin. But they did it. They were a part of the fight to prove they belonged here.
If you needed a push, he would give you a push. If you needed a pull, he would give you a pull. If you just needed encouragement, he could meet you and talk to you and kind of determine where you were psychologically, motivationally. And if you needed a kick in the butt, I think he would do that. If you needed encouragement, you know, he would give you encouragement. So he had great insight when it came to that?
Many times I have a student in my office and I would be giving him holy hell, and I couldn't wait for him to get out because I wanted to cry. But it was one of those things I had to do. And the university was very apprehensive and very negative toward their being on campus.
Tim Nugent's tough love mentality empowered his students to stand up for themselves and be advocates for people with disabilities around the world. One of Nugent's strongest beliefs has always been that showing by example is more effective than getting laws passed.
This goes to Dr. Nugent. He saw how important it was going to be to have leaders that had disabilities to go out and change things for everybody else. He knew that the students that were going to come to this university would leave the university with an education, and he knew that they were, for a long time, going to be the most educated individuals with disabilities in the United States. One of the things he taught all of his students with disabilities was that when they left the University of Illinois, they had to go out and be leaders. The only way we can truly say thank you to the people who have come before us and given us this opportunity we enjoy is by making sure we add to it and build on it. And if we've done that, then that's the best way we can say thanks.
The individuals with disabilities themselves are the best ambassadors for this. Their achievements will change attitudes much more than they're hearing me speak about it. And that's the role that our alumni and our students have played throughout. The acceptance by the general public in as a rule, and the fact that standards have been established for different things, have helped to carry forward our positive attitude toward people with disabilities.
Tim Nugent's hard work has never been forgotten by the students in the program.
Well, the campus still enjoys its standing as a pioneering leader in advocating for and supporting and accommodating persons with disabilities because of Nugent. We still today are recognized as a university leader in this area. He is the seed of that.
I really admired him because he had a lot of spunk. He wasn't afraid of vice presidents of universities or presidents. He would state his case, and he wasn't afraid of making people angry because he knew he was right. He knew that what he wanted to accomplish was going to be good for people.
He was focused, and he knew what he wanted to do. To do what he did, you have to be focused, because there were a lot of people that just did not want that to happen. And there were people, even parents of able-bodied students at the university, and I think Tim would be the first one to tell you this, where he sent letters saying that they wanted to keep those freaks, meaning us, away from the student population. You can imagine what Tim had to go through to do that and to listen to that nonsense. But he was directed and focused, and he had a will that nobody was going to stop.
He was very persistent, and I know he never gave up. He had a dream, and he carried it through. And to this day, I do have to interject this. He probably remembers the name of every student who he ever interviewed and helped get into this university.
Tim Nugent is now recognized locally, nationally, and internationally as an advocate for the rights of people with disabilities. Every curb cut, every ramp building, and every automatic door can be attributed in part to Nugent's pioneering work. Most important of all, the many students on the U of I campus who are wheeling to class each day are a tribute to Nugent's vision.
We hope you have enjoyed Breaking Down Disability Barriers, the legacy of Timothy Nugent. This program was produced by University Laboratory High School students Catherine Flos and Sheila Gogola. Interviews were conducted by students from the classes of 2011 and 2014.
Stories were contributed by Adrian Dank, Jean Driscoll, Charles Elmer, Michael Frogley, John Gunderson, Brad Hedrick, Carl Lewis, Rio Wilher, and Tim Nugent. The program was directed by Dave Dickey of Illinois Public Media and University Laboratory High School teacher Janet Morford. For more information on this project, visit our website at illinoisyouthmedia.org. I'm Catherine Flos.
And I'm Sheila Gogoloff.